Hi guys, Martin here. I just wanted to let you know that Niv's audio doesn't sound as good in the beginning of this episode, but gets better after about 14 minutes, so please stay with us. This episode is also the first one to feature chapter marks, so if they don't work on your device or whatever means you're using to listen to this podcast, please let us know at estheritesinexcel@gmail.com. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
How? We kind of went all over the place there. Yeah. How do we want to start this?
Yeah, let's start with the classic introduction. Like, you know, hello.
All right, you gotta put that hello in.
Hello.
And welcome to season 2, episode 6, or episode 15 of Asteroids in Exile. I'm Niv.
And I'm Martin.
Hi, Martin. And so we've got another bumper episode because we haven't caught up in yonks. It's been a long time.
A month.
It's been a month or a little bit more. Yeah. So a lot's happened in between. So we got a lot to catch up on. So let's do a quick overview of what we can talk about. So we got a lot of the Comic-Con stuff that came out. Lots of trailers. We get our reaction to a few of those. So.
Some announcements. A lot of TVs happening.
A lot of TV. You've started a new TV show, so we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, wait, which one was it? And then we'll talk about Spider-Man: Homecoming as well, because we haven't done a review or discussion about that one.
We haven't talked about that. We really haven't talked about that. Not even in private.
So yeah.
People will get a first reaction, a true first.
This is actually the first time you and I talking in like a month. So
yeah.
I actually ended up getting sick for a week. So that took me out of commission for a while. So, yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to be able to record for a while, Martin. He's like, oh, great.
Well, it's not like I had nothing to do.
Well, yes, you've been busy on your side.
I got my wife pregnant. Now we have to make a room and arrange for the new asteroid to enter the exile.
Martin's the new asteroid entering exile. I love it. That's awesome. And yes, and you're also in the process of transitioning your man cave into a nursery. So that's an experience in itself. So, all right. And so I don't know if that leads into this next one, but you've also gotten rid of your PS4 and games.
Yeah, I quit video games because of gamers. I can't listen to people anymore talking about video games extensively. Well, not reviewers. I still listen to video game reviews, but in my social circle. When people talk about video games, it's like they're talking about going into the office, talking about their work, and you can really you really feel that they are struggling with what they are playing, like struggling with the grind of modern games.
Yeah.
It made me think how I interact with games these days on an emotional basis, and. Over the last couple of months, I've been spending a lot of time in front of the emulator station I built myself for old Nintendo games, old Sega games and stuff. And I enjoy those much, much more than, let's say, modern games like Horizon Zero Dawn, which I quit after the tutorial when the world opened up and also the inventory opened up and all the stuff I had to get to build a new satchel and things. And I thought, it's not gaming to me anymore. I mean, I still dig modern games and what modern games do, but I decided to take a break from modern gaming, especially after the announcement of the new Xbox and Sony's broken promise of you can play all the new games on your PS4 as well. When in reality you should get the PS4 Pro and the new TV set to get the full experience.
Yeah, I mean it's always going to be. I mean that was one of the things, right? So the full experience, you mean like the full 4K HDR?
Yeah, to really get to see what was or to get an example of what was intended during the game's creation.
So like just running it at like a lower. Resolution and without HDR, you're like, I'm missing out here. Like this is not the experience that the developers intended.
Yeah, it feels like we're getting a during a generation, we are getting first tier and second tier customers.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, so is that like creating a class
system? Yeah, a class system, thank you.
You and know, class system.
I don't feel comfortable with supporting this kind of business.
Class system.
Yeah.
Yeah, as in like the experience should be the same.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, is that analogous somehow to movies in terms of like whether you watch something in 3D or 2D or IMAX versus, I guess, standard presentation?
To a degree, but because Dunkirk has like 80 different versions being shown on different screens, and oftentimes you don't live in the vicinity to an IMAX theater. I mean, here, I think in Vienna we have two compatible screens. I'm not sure, I have to verify that number, but there are certain limitations due to proximity of the venue. So I guess it's kind of the same, not the same.
Mm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes, because you're right. I mean, now we've got... It used to be that when you bought a Xbox or a PlayStation or a Nintendo, everyone who had that system got the same experience.
And at least for the next 8 years.
Yeah. Whereas now it is splitting, and then you've also got VR on top of that,
yeah,
right? Which is coming. I wonder whether... I mean, because the other thing I'm thinking about is PCs. PC gamers have always had that sense of like fracturing of the different experiences based on what graphics card they had and what their system was capable of. So different people playing the same game would have also had a slightly different experience. And so the challenge for developers when it came to PC gaming was they had to develop for all of those different combinations.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, you would run the test to see how good your system was, and then you'd have to play the game at that level, you know? And it's almost like console gaming is coming into that arena now. So it's weird. I think on one hand, it could be that there's now more choice. Like, if you're a casual gamer and you don't need a 4K HDR experience, then there is an option for you. And on the other hand, if you're the kind of person who wants to have the higher... I don't know, they're calling it professional, but, you know, professional gamer.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make sense to me unless you're playing competitively and getting paid for it. then, yeah, you can get a higher quality experience, I guess. But it is strange to think about. And the other thing, you know, so that's one aspect of it. The other aspect that you mentioned was like how complicated the games are now. Like, yeah, my favorite games are games that you could just jump into and within like 10, 15 minutes, get a hold of what you're trying to do in the game and then start having fun. Whereas now, the learning curve, you got to dedicate like at least 3 or 4 hours to get into the game, understand how the inventory system works. And then there's these open world games, and like, I don't have time for that. Like, you know, it's just, so I was going to, so like there's the learning curve and also the time requirement to dedicate to these things, which I guess you're short on as well, right?
Yeah. And people don't, you know, when you talk with other people about games, it's like talking about work. It's not about the fun experiences anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just comparing, or when I listen to a few guys at work who play Destiny, they're not talking about the game anymore. It's just game stats and what this YouTuber said and that YouTuber said and what's on this blog and on that blog, and they don't talk about their personal experience, and it feels like those games are lacking the personal experience. You can't connect to them, especially in the case of Destiny, which has a great backstory. You can read those Grimoire cards, or there's some the lore is hidden in some extra cards you can unlock, and you can read those online. And there are some great ideas in the game that don't get developed in any way, shape, or form. And that's the thing that I'm missing. The aforementioned Horizon has a
story.
Yeah, a story in the
story mode.
You can have a personal connection in that game, but it gets shortened due to the vastness of the open world and just the resource management. And then I looked at my shelf, and I bought Persona 5. For some reason, because I was told it's good, and it's still sitting along Dark Souls 3 in the original packaging, you know, in the wrapping, in the plastic wrapper.
Yeah, You haven't broken it open.
Yeah, so I thought, well, why am I doing the last game I really and thoroughly enjoyed on a console was Assassin's Creed 2 and the add-ons and the Arkham games, except for Arkham Knight. Those were the last good experiences I had with AAA video games. So I thought, wow. let's get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't have any consoles now.
No, I kept my PS3 because of Shadow of the Colossus and Journey.
Yeah.
And I have the emulation station on my TV. Because Nintendo won't produce the NES Mini, and the Super Nintendo is already sold out everywhere.
Yeah.
Just mind-boggling. Could just print money with that stuff. It's really strange.
Okay. So that's the end. I've got my PlayStation. I haven't played it in about 3 months. So
yeah.
I might have to go down the path that you went down. But I'm like halfway through. What am I halfway through? I've got the new Tomb Raider, which I haven't opened yet.
Yeah.
Because I've made a commitment to not open a new game until I finish the previous game. So I played, you know, I've only really got 3 games. We've got Battlefield 1, which I enjoyed playing. And I think that was because it's kind of like a drop-in shooter. Just kind of, you don't have to learn and craft too much before you can start having fun.
No, just dive in.
Yeah. And then, so I only started playing that when I first got it, right? So that's when Battlefield 1 and stuff first came out. And then I currently have been playing The Last of Us. But because it's a story, I just haven't had the time to go back. Like, there's just too much going on because it's summertime in Chicago now, which is when the sun's out and everyone's outside having fun. So, and the other thing is, my excuse, I thought the winter was going to be really bad because that's what everyone says about Chicago winters. And I thought I'm going to be stuck in my apartment. But turned out the winter was great. The weather was awesome. It snowed like 3 times. So it wasn't like a thing at all. And then so I didn't end up playing games. And so I think for us as casual gamers, yeah, there's a lot of politics and it's a whole world to enter into. I mean, this isn't a gaming podcast, but, you know, there are clearly dedicated channels. And like you said, you know, there's a lot of other stuff happening in the gaming world rather than people just having fun playing games, which is what distracts.
And it's mind boggling. Strange things.
Yeah. Strange indeed. So, well, now that you don't have video games, I guess you can spend more time doing other things. So I heard you've been watching a new TV show.
Yeah, I started watching Supergirl because of your recommendation.
Now, okay, go on. Before I defend myself.
I don't know how deep I am. Callista Flockhart is still in the show, so I guess I'm still in season 1. I think she leaves the show with season 2.
Okay.
And it's a better show than I anticipated. It's a nice thing to have on in the background. But it's like with all the current DC shows, they look great and they have great ideas, but I'm not really down on the execution. I wonder how the next level Legends of Tomorrow season is going to work out, because there was Buwana Beast in the teaser, so they're bringing out everybody who means nothing in the DC universe to please guys like me.
So you said you just finished season 1 or you're
still... I think I finished season 1.
Okay.
Admit I haven't watched it in the last couple of weeks because a few things come in between, a few new shows.
And is that something you watch with Susie as well, or is it just you?
We started watching together, but you know, then our entertainment paths drifted apart.
Diverge. Yeah. I think the reason why I asked that is I think that's where Supergirl is really great. I think I actually quit all those shows. So
all the
CW DC stuff. Like, I was watching Flash and Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. I wasn't really a massive Supergirl fan until they had the crossover episodes. And it's because Arrow and Flash just kept on getting not so much darker and darker, but like more monotonous. Like, it was all, it just felt like the same thing over and over. Like, they just brought another random D-grade bad guy to do something, and like the fun of those shows went away. Whereas Supergirl, what was cool and what I enjoyed about the episodes that I watched was it was still fun. She was still positive.
And
I think
that's fun with her powers.
Yeah. Whereas like, oh, the Flash is always super guilty. I change time. Everyone's like, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm always doing the bad things. And then Oliver Queen's always like, he's just so brooding, you know, because Legends of Tomorrow, I didn't know. I just kind of lost track of that show anyway. But that's what I enjoyed about Supergirl, is she had that sense of fun. And like you said, she enjoyed being a hero, whereas everyone else was just feeling so much of, they were getting so emo about it.
And that's what's keeping me with the show. What I think is annoying that they have this secret organization that monitors all the aliens.
Yeah.
That's what I think is the big letdown of Supergirl. They shouldn't go all global, just do more of a Lois and Clark show. That was the first thing I saw when Dean Cain is in the show in Supergirl. Is it Dean Cain?
Really?
He plays her stepdad.
Oh, does he? I didn't even see that.
And I thought, when I saw him, I thought, yeah, bring it back a bit. Make it about Supergirl, not this global thing. Just have fun.
And I think that's also where it works really well. And so like when I recommend shows to my friends and they watch it with their girlfriends or wives or whatever, because it's so much more of a positive show and it's got a bit more like about the, like you said, the smaller scale, the relationships are a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
They really enjoy it. And it's a great way to sort of spend time and bond over a superhero show, you know? So it'll be interesting to see as you continue, as it goes. Because I think by season one, she still hasn't done a lot of crossover with the DC, with the CW shows.
No.
Whereas as we go forward, she ends up meeting the Flash and then she gets drawn in because the show goes from being a CBS show to a CW show. So since then, I don't know what happened because that's around the time where the Flash was facing off against his fourth speedster wearing black. And I'm like, oh, how many times can they do this? So I just kind of lost track of it.
Did it a lot in the comics. So
yeah, the whole Sabotage storyline. Yeah, but at the same time, like he wasn't in the first seasons of the Flash, he was having so much of fun.
Yeah.
Like he was enjoying being the Flash and he was positive. Whereas by the time we get to season 3 or 4, like he's feeling so guilty about so much and he can no longer have the fun of being a superhero. And that's around the time when I started tuning out because I'm like, oh, I don't need to see another brooding hero. I've got Oliver Queen and he was not going anywhere with his broodingness, you know? So anyway, it's interesting. So it'll be, you know, if you do continue, keep us updated on what you think of that.
I'll do.
But because I've ducked out. And as a great segue, one thing I'm really excited about, which I'm even more excited because apparently this teaser episodes is the new DuckTales show. So that was my little joke to segue between ducking out.
And amazing segue.
I came out with that just now. That's the level I'm working at right now, Martin. So DuckTales, you've seen it.
Yeah.
You've seen
it a few hours ago.
What do you think?
It's a great show. It's neat. It feels like the old cartoon. The characters have been updated without feeling forced to a degree. The animation style is great. I mean, I don't see the Don Rosa or Carl Barks comparison to the artwork, but that's just me. But I like the style of the show. The humor is well done. And yeah, please watch it. Don't stop the podcast. Watch it afterwards. There are teaser episodes out and they're like a minute each or 2 minutes each. And they're so well done because each of those teaser episodes feels like you've watched a 20-minute episode of
an actual episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, you know, I'm super excited just because of the nostalgic value of this. Like, I used to watch DuckTales as a kid. And it's not that I have fond memories of DuckTales specific storylines or episodes, but just the sense of fun and adventure is what I'm looking forward to. Because, again, you know, I'm not getting that out of the CW show, so much with all of them. So, yeah, I'm like, and so it's like a combination of looking for that feeling. So it'll be cool to see. It'll be great if they can capture that with this new season. And it sounds like from what you've experienced with the teaser episodes that it does.
Yeah, they do with the first two episodes.
And is that available on like, where are those teasers? Are they just on YouTube or?
They're on the internet.
They're on the internet. Okay, so look. So search the internet and you shall find them.
So hold on. Put it in the show notes if they're available on YouTube. I got them through a friend.
Okay. Say no more.
Yeah.
So moving on then. So apparently there's also, in terms of teaser episodes, there's also Ant-Man yeah. animated short episodes out there.
Yeah, but I don't know if Ant-Man gets his own show in the Avengers Assemble thing or something like that. I just saw the teaser episodes. they're really funny too. And the animation style is interesting because they go, I don't know how the coloring style is called when you just got the dots.
Pointillism? I mean,
yeah, something like that. No, it's great little vignettes about him going to his daughter's. Yeah, he has the daughter in the comics too, but it focuses on the movie version of Ant-Man, and he goes to the science fair at his daughter's school.
Yeah,
and meets Yellow Jacket there, and they have a fight.
So does this fit into like the larger Marvel universe thing, or is it just a part of the animated universe?
I think it's part of the animated universe, but borrows from the movie continuity.
Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah. And it's real fun. It's not as much fun as DuckTales, but those Marvel animated shows are generally very good shows. And I think Ant-Man lends itself exceptionally well to that good concept because the character is much more lighthearted. I think it more than Avengers Assemble or the Spider-Man show that was recently on, because that got annoying after a while. I think. I don't know what it's called, or what it was called, Ultimate Spider-Man, and then Sinister Six or something like that.
So I think Ultimate Spider-Man was sort of the umbrella show, and then they had different storylines within that, I believe. Because I watched the first season of Ultimate Spider-Man, which was a while ago now. Because that's when he had the team, he had like Iron Fist and Power Man.
And White Tiger.
Yeah, I was going to say Black Cat, but it was White Tiger, right?
Or Silver Sable.
Yeah, I thought that show was pretty good. It was a little bit juvenile, like it was a little bit kiddie, but it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was exciting.
Yeah, and there was a neat Doctor Strange episode somewhere in between, around when the movie came out, of course.
Funnily enough.
Yeah.
But what I didn't see with that is, I mean, at some point, like Miles Morales comes in and they do like a Spider-Verse, like he goes into the multi-dimensional Spider-Verse or whatever, and he meets the other versions of Spider-Man. And because Miles shows up. So I'm a big Miles Morales fan, so I would have liked to have seen that, but I just never got that far into it. Because I couldn't just skip that episode. You know, I have to watch everything in sequence, so.
Of course,
it's just too far away. Hey, I take this seriously, okay?
It's not just a hobby.
So with the Ant-Man thing, is that going to be like a part of, is Ant-Man going to get his own show?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything since from it. I just got the announcement that there are going to be some episodes out there. And I don't know if Disney is testing the waters, if that show is going to stick.
Oh, well, so maybe that's another good segue into the next topic, which is Disney's streaming service and sort of the fan being hit with Netflix. So we had a couple of like big things there, which was, the Disney licensing agreement with Netflix is going to be expired. It's going to come to an end in 2019. So Netflix is going to lose a lot of the Disney content. So they've got like all the Star Wars movies and stuff. Well, they've got a lot of the Star Wars stuff now, but that's all going to go away because Disney will soon be starting off their own streaming service. So that'll be yet another streaming service that you're going to have to pay for.
But Disney changed the announcement about the Star Wars and Marvel stuff. So I think that's...
Did they change the announcement? Because I did hear that Netflix was still in negotiation with Disney
and
keeping some of that content.
Yeah, and Bob Iger said something about the Pixar stuff being moved away, and they left the Star Wars stuff out. And the first thing or rumor that surfaced when the announcement was made was that we're going to get a live-action Star Wars series that's going to be made available exclusively through the Disney streaming service.
Yeah, I mean, for Disney, I can really see it's a balance between several things, right? I mean, they have enough content for themselves to start their own streaming service and have that be like a massive thing. Like, you just can't not have it because it's going to have so much. It's going to have all the Marvel stuff. It's going to have all of the Star Wars stuff. It's going to have all the Disney stuff, which in itself is a massive catalog. So they've got enough content to host their own streaming service. But at the same time, for a lot of their properties and IP, like you look at Star Wars, they probably make more money through merchandising than they do through the movies and the content itself. So that's almost something where, in order to keep the merchandising engine going, they would license that out to other people. So you keep your brand awareness in as many places as possible. And so you keep on selling the toys, but at the same time, you want to have enough of a draw for people to subscribe to your own streaming service as well. And so I can see that Disney will reach a compromise where they won't just keep everything for themselves from a streaming point of view, but for those big properties that have massive merchandising appeal, they will still have it on Netflix and other places.
And I wonder if Disney's original plan wasn't to buy Netflix until Netflix announced that it's like $20 billion in debt.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that's Netflix seeing the writing on the wall. Like, one of the quotes that I had from, I guess, the Netflix side was they started going down the route of creating their own original content 5 years ago because they knew eventually this was what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, Netflix took on that debt. They took on that risk because they said we need to create our own material, right? So they're willing to wear that debt for now. And it's, it's really interesting because I've been watching this this set of talks by Simon Sinek. I don't know if I've mentioned Simon Sinek before, maybe, but he's he's kind of like one of my favorite philosophers. He does a lot of talks around how business and organizations work, but he looks at it from the view of human psychology and biology as well. And one of the things that, if you haven't heard of Simon Sinek, there's a great video called Start With Why.
Yeah.
How Great Leaders Inspire Action, I believe is the subtitle. And so, his stuff's all generally about leadership and what being a leader means. And it's fascinating. Like, it's great because, like I said, it combines human anthropology with the way our biological systems work to understand behavior and then how to create the types of behaviors that we want in society and organizations. Like I said, it's fantastic. Anyway, why I bring it up is his most recent set of, content that's out there, and also the new book that will come out soon, I'm sure, is about game theory. And he's looking at infinite games versus finite games. And so finite games are defined as where the game has an end, and at the end of the game, there's going to be a winner. And so baseball, for example, is a finite game, is the example that he uses. So like any sport where there's established rules is a finite game, whereas infinite games don't have a clear sense of rules. And the objective of the game is not to win, but to outlast the competitor. Yep. And the key thing with infinite games is that there's always going to be the only, you need to outlast your competitor because eventually your competitor or you will run out of resources and will drop out of the game. And then whoever's left in the infinite game will have to face new competitors that come up. So he talks about how business sees itself as a finite game. They're always trying to beat the competition and win. But it's actually an infinite game because, it's more about outlasting the competition and continuing to innovate in that way rather than beating anyone because the timescales, are arbitrary. Baseball and soccer have a time limit. That it's going to end eventually, so you just need to make sure you get to the end of the game. Whereas something like Netflix is they're taking a much more longer term view of things. They're not trying to win the year or win a certain time period. They're saying we're willing to go into this debt now because we know that in 10 years the landscape's going to look massively different, and we need to set ourselves up for that. So they're playing at a much different level to the way we expect them to play, which is why the $20 billion debt I think feels so scary. But at the same time, they're managing the risk that, in 5 years, if we can continue to grow our subscriber base and if we can continue with the trend that we're in now, we'll be able to manage that debt.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to turn out, obviously, but it's interesting to think about it in those terms.
It could be. And with broadening their viewer base, they can attract licensed material. Like with Disney, you don't have to grow an audience. Disney can grow an audience, but smaller publishers that would need to invest serious money to have a viewer base as large as the Netflix one can just bring their product to the table, still earn something, but get the exposure as well.
Yeah, and like you're starting to see that now. So I think even the director of District 9, I forgot his name.
Neil Blomkamp.
Neil Blomkamp. So he's started making these short movies, which are really interesting because he's effectively trying to break ground, right? So he's trying to say, let's just do these short, quick and dirty movies. They're really high production quality anyway, but he's saying, let's try to work out what's going to work, what's not going to work, and we'll find the next big thing that way. And I think that that's really awesome. And so you look at it, allows artists like that to do that experimental and innovative work. And then Netflix can be the platform, because they're already so huge. All they need to do at this stage is keep the subscribers they already have by providing fresh content, so people don't feel like they need to leave. Because Disney, the new DC streaming channel, and I guess Warner Brothers is going to create its own streaming channel as well. They're all trying to grow. They're going to have to start from scratch. Whereas Netflix already has millions of people globally on their platform. And it's about making sure that they can retain those people and have enough content and incentive for new people to come in. And so as long as they can do that, I think that's pretty much the game for them, you know?
With Warner Brothers, I think that's it's one of the, not the stupidest ideas, but an idea that they should have meditated about a little bit longer, because the only hook they're having for their streaming platform is Young Justice Season 3. And the Teen Titans live action show?
Yeah. To be honest, out of those two, I'm expecting the Teen Titans live action show to disappoint me.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have Starfire in that show, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to do Starfire.
Yeah.
Like, unless they spend, like, unless they've got a movie budget, it's going to be really cheap. And that's just going to annoy me.
And that's the same thing with the Japanese tokusatsu shows like Kamen Rider or Super Sentai. They set up a lot of stuff, CGI heavy stuff and expensive stuff in the first few episodes. And all those things are so important for the story. And they disappear three or four episodes in because they have to save budget, but, you know, real people in. That's always disappointing me, and I think the same will go for the, as you've mentioned, the Teen Titans show.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know how they're going to keep that going. Like, and then, do they have Beast Boy as well?
I don't know. I haven't followed the news about the show. I just heard about Starfire, people getting all pumped up because Starfire and Dick Grayson are in the show.
Yeah. I mean, that'll be interesting. I'll watch it, but I know it's going to be like, it's going to be like where I'm at with The Flash now. The first season might be interesting, but after that, I'm just going to be like, ugh, you know, I don't know. Keep an open mind. But Young Justice Season 3 is going to be, that's what would draw me in. Like, that's the one, the only show that would draw me in at this point.
It's going to be the bee's knees. And there's so much good stuff coming out that's going to be competing with Teen Titans or Justice League. I mean, alone if you count the next few months. Yeah, Defenders next week. You have Stranger Things Season 2. The new Star Trek show.
That's coming out in September, isn't it? Like at the end of September. Wow.
Three big hits. And I think, the Star Trek Discovery is going to be available through Netflix and the CBS.
CBS All Access.
Something like that.
Yeah, so that's going to be weird because I think it's going to be available in Netflix everywhere else except America.
In
America, it'll be on CBS All Access. So that's why sometimes, you know, every time I go back to Australia and I'm like, Netflix is so much better in Australia.
Really?
You guys get everything, whereas we have it split between all those different providers, and it just drives me crazy.
So there is an upside to have Netflix outside of the US.
Yeah, like you guys, because there's no CBS All Access in Austria or like Europe, right? Yeah. So they just license it out to Netflix because they're not losing anything. But at the same time, it's like all the Netflix subscribers here will have to get CBS All Access if they want to watch that. I guess you're going to have to let me know how it is, and then I'll work out whether or not it's worth me. Yeah, because, I mean, I'm at the stage now where I still pay for cable, so maybe it'll be on CBS here. I don't know if it'll even be on TV, but like on demand or whatever. But
We're getting subscription services for shows, like Sky Europe is offering a subscription service for Game of Thrones, so you can only watch Game of Thrones.
Seriously?
Yeah.
No, that would be much better, because I'd rather pay for depending on how much it's going to cost per month, right? But I'd rather pay for the individual shows I want to watch rather than pay for everything and then not watch like 90% of it.
Yeah.
But looking at the cable deals here, I'm like on the fence about cord cutting and moving straight to a digital subscription style model. I'm still doing the maths. I haven't been able to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, the situation in the US is even more complex than here in Europe, because we have you have cable TV and you have satellite TV.
Yeah,
that's it. And you buy your package. But then I got a satellite dish, and classic TV is just for when I'm alone and I need somebody to talk to me, and I'm not in the mood for a podcast, then I'll turn on TV and let some documentary or some social porn run in the background.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I generally don't watch live TV at all. Like, except for like the news. That's the only thing that, you know, maybe I'll tune in for, but
the rest is dead. It's dead.
Oh, it's just, and so much, there's a lot of trash,
Yeah.
Just going, you know, so finishing off the Netflix side of things, yeah. You know, I think that's also why, you know, you're starting to see Netflix is being a little bit more intentional, maybe, because I think they threw a lot of money at a lot of shows very fast over the last couple of years, but now they're starting to sort of take the foot off the accelerator a little bit. So, you know, with Sense8, you know, they decided not to move forward with that, and they are going to have a 2-hour, I think, like a movie to close off the story.
Yeah. And I think that's good. Did I tell you I watched the whole series? I finished the whole series.
You finished season 2?
Yeah.
I'm like halfway through season 2 and I'm struggling because I feel this is really dragging. The plot, the pacing of the plot is just so slow. Like I watch one episode and I feel like I've been sitting there for 3 hours and I'm like, come on, you know. And this is even though like it's beautiful to watch because I can watch it in 4K HDR. Like it's great. It's like one of the best looking shows in TV, but at the same time it's like go somewhere, you know. The show is not going anywhere.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are too many characters. It tries to be so many things all at once, and while it's beautiful in trying to be that show, it's also its biggest failing.
And I mean, the thing that drives me crazy, they're being hunted. There should be a sense of urgency associated with being hunted by an organization that wants nothing but the destruction of your species and your what you are. But they spend so much of time having sex. Oh my god!
Yeah.
Like bastards. Seriously, people, how many slow shots of like ass walking towards another person in a pool and then like doing the same scene across 3 different continents? I'm like, okay. You know, we've done it once. Can we just move on and get to the urgency? Because every episode, there's like, they spend like 20 minutes doing this, that kind of scene. And you're like, ugh, this is not going anywhere. Just get to BPO already, you know?
Yeah. But then finish season 2.
Okay. It's worth to get to the end.
Yeah. I mean, now that we know that there's a definitive ending to this, there's going to be a definitive ending to the story. It's worth going all the way.
Okay. All right. Well, I just had the Pride Parade episode, so hopefully I'm close to the end of season 2.
Yeah, it's like 12 episodes or 10 episodes.
Oh, really? Yeah. Because I think I'm up to like 7 now. I don't know. So hopefully it's, yeah. But anyway, the thing is, like, I just need to get through it. And it's, again, like one of those things where I'm so stretched for time that I really have to make choices about, is this where I want to spend the next hour, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to get through it so I can move on to other stuff. Because I heard the Ozark, or just Ozark on Netflix, is also really good. And this, apparently, if you're a Breaking Bad fan, it's kind of in that vein, but it's got its own spin. So that's one that I think I want to look into next. So cool. And then, so that's pretty much our Netflix roundup, right? We talked about Castlevania earlier, which I watched just before getting sick and then had fever dreams about vampires and demons attacking me. So...
Yeah,
you can put that in the bonus material. I won't have to relive that now.
It's gonna be in there. Don't worry. It's already decided.
All right. So should we move on to? Should we do trailers next, or should we move on to movies and do a review of Spider-Man: Homecoming?
Let's do
thoughts and reactions.
Let's do our review. We haven't reviewed anything in such a long time.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's go in depth.
Let's go back to Spider-Man. All right. So do you want to kick off? What do you think? Just initial reactions to Spider-Man.
The initial reaction was very good, because it's a modern take on the figure.
Yeah.
It could be more modern, you know, with not Harold Glover. He's not Danny Glover. The
I know Afro-American actor. I can't remember his name.
Who's gonna play Donald Glover?
Donald Glover. Yeah, yeah. It's like Daniel Glover.
The Glover guy. He should have been Spider-Man or a Miles Morales thing, I think, because he was so fucking charming in that movie. Even in the short time
two scenes he was in. He was
that guy. He just oozed. Acting off the screen. No, but it's a great movie, and I saw it with a great crowd. A lot of girls in Marvel t-shirts, but not in Spider-Man t-shirts, but Hulk t-shirts.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah.
They seem to be massive geeks because, you know, they threw around inside baseball jokes. It was just so great. I was amazed by watching the audience react
yeah, right.
to the things happening on screen.
That's cool.
So it was a great viewing. But my brother, yesterday, my brother made me aware of a big story hole, plot hole in the movie that I didn't realize in the cinema. But yeah, it's a great movie. As we mentioned earlier, Michael Keaton is great in it.
Oh, Michael Keaton was fantastic. I mean, I think the acting general overall, like Tom Holland, I think as Spider-Man was awesome. Going back to what you were saying before, I thought it was modern and it was fresh. I think it was a great balance of those two things. I love the perspective on how from Spider-Man's point of view, the Avengers seem to be like grown-ups who just don't get it and are a little bit uncool. Like they're cool, but they're also like, they're just like adults and they're just like, oh, you know. And that was a great perspective.
Yeah.
I loved the Captain America, like the TV spots or the kind of like the high school announcement videos he was making. It's kind of like, how many of these do I have to do? You know, like it was just great to show like how like when we look at Captain America, we're like seeing the Avenger and now like almost the rebel Avenger, you know, who's like standing up and like doing all these things. But like kids in high school, who's just like, don't do drugs. You know?
Yeah,
that was really awesome.
At the sports teacher saying, why are we still showing these videos? He's like,
isn't he a criminal now?
Isn't he a criminal? So great.
And even Iron Man, like who is like Robert Downey Jr. obviously was great in the small scenes that he was in, but even being seen as like an adult who just doesn't get it, like obviously, like, you know, you can just feel the adolescent frustration from Spider-Man's side. It's like, why does he treat me like a kid as he jumps on the bed? You know, like I thought some of that scene actually I thought was a little bit forced, but at the same time I thought the overall theme of how, you know, you got a kid trying to assert his personality and individuality and prove himself, but being held back by these like adult figures. I thought that was played out really well. And then also like Peter learning that sense of responsibility and like learning what it means to become Spider-Man, I thought was played out really well. It wasn't as ham-fisted as it was in the previous movies. And it was ham-fisted in the previous movies because we knew that it was going to happen. Like, we knew, oh, how many times does Uncle Ben have to die, you know? Whereas here, I'm glad they skipped over a lot of that. They alluded to some of it.
Yeah.
But they made Peter learn those lessons in other ways. And, like, the decision. And so, you know, this is going to be spoilers now. The part of it that didn't work for me was the ending. Because everything leading up to that was so good. Like, there's that scene where Peter's on the rooftop at the party and he looks. And so, you know, he's been told by Tony Stark and the other heroes that if you go down this path, you're going to have to make sacrifices, you know, like you know. And so he's on the rooftop of the party and he can, you know, so he sees the crash in the background and he's like, I've got to be Spider-Man and go there. Then he looks down at his friends in the party. He's like, well, I also want to be in the party. Like, I also want to have that experience. But he makes a choice to be Spider-Man in that moment, which is telling, you know. And I think that happens maybe probably another two or three times in the course of the movie where he has to make the choice between being Peter Parker and the kid or being Spider-Man. And he chooses Spider-Man at every junction. You know, it's great, great storytelling and character development or revelation, you know, in the course of that. But in the end, when Tony Stark gives him the opportunity to actually become Spider-Man in its final stage, he doesn't take it. And I was like, that didn't gel for me.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, so the flip side of maybe what they were trying to do is maybe at that moment he realizes that he's not ready, right? And that's why, I mean, because that's why he shouldn't take it. And that's why Tony Stark and stuff was like, maybe that was a good decision. But the journey that Peter was going on was all about learning and proving that he is ready. And so I think the ending to me, like the landing, was a bit of a stumble. It didn't quite work. Like, I think if Peter was going to go down the path where he was going to refuse, he needed to have more of a loss. I think his victory at the end was almost too good. because he didn't come away from it thinking that he had anything else to prove or anything else to learn.
Yeah.
Maybe I missed something, because I think the reason why he, and because I've only seen it once and I loved it when I saw it, right? But the reason why he walks away is because he's got a, you know, it gives the audience the feeling that he feels that he's not ready. Either that, or he's just being a total smartass with Tony Stark and being like, you know, it's kind of like a massive FU. But I feel that it wasn't set up to be convincing enough that after making the decision to be Spider-Man at every moment and every junction, and then it working out well, and him almost proving that he should be Spider-Man when given the option to become Spider-Man, he doesn't. He chooses not to. And then he smiles about it at the end too. Like, this is all you've ever wanted, you know? I don't know. What's your take?
You know, I felt like, I think that at the end, he also realized that he was in over his head with the, with the situation with the Vulture. Mm-hmm. And he realized that maybe he's not ready to step up to become an Avenger, to become Spider-Man's final form, and rather practice or stay a part of the community.
Yeah.
That Spider-Man is. I mean, that's the biggest strength of the character in the comics. That he works well in the team environment that spans the whole globe. I mean, yeah, in the Spider-Man comic, he's become Iron Man now, effectively. Oh, but if you,
it's the Iron Spider thing.
Yeah. But if you go back to the old comic books, he's much more of a neighborhood Spider-Man, you know, with all the errors and then shortcomings that come with it, as we see in the movie when he gets the guy off the bike, for example, or the guy who breaks into his own car, which he accidentally thwarts. I think that as well as with Tom Holland, given his age, this environment works better for the character at this stage than him going global, so to say. It came a bit out of the... I didn't anticipate him to say no to the offer to join the Avengers, but it was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah,
it felt more natural,
really,
to me.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. No, I don't know. Maybe I do want to watch it again. I mean, because I thoroughly enjoyed it, except for like I thought that character decision at the end, and that's from a writing / story point of view as well.
Yeah,
I was really paying close attention to how they were going to tell that story. Or trying to. yeah, it's an interesting one. Because the thing is, at the end of the day, we know he's going to end up in Avengers 3. You know? Like, he's going to be there.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, I agree with you in that it'll be much... It makes more sense. I agree with you in that with the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is where he works best. In the sense of, like, being a part of that community, being a part of, you know, having that... Maybe the scale is smaller, but with where he is and who he is, that's where he can have the biggest impact.
Yeah.
And so I think what would have been the way the changes I would make effectively was in the way his interaction with the Vulture goes, is that he manages to stop the Vulture and stop the bad things from happening, but does it in a way that he actually does lose some things, like his... He needs to come to realize that this is way over his head. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, he, obviously, because he's the hero of the movie, he has to defeat the bad guy, right? So he has to win that battle. But he shouldn't level up as a character. Leveling up means that if he, you know, leveling up means he joins the Avengers because he's proven that he can work at that level. Because once you have proven that you can work at that level, then why would you go back? It's like... Getting, you know, it's like now I've got all the big guns, I've got all the cheat codes in Doom, but I'm still going to play the lower levels, you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm still going to be invincible and just shoot out like all the minions and not ever progress to the next stage. And so what I felt in the movie was that he did level up. He did defeat the Vulture by himself. There was that awesome scene where he has to like lift up all the debris, you know, which sort of threw back to like the comics as well. And he kind of like, he finds that strength. He finds what it means to be Spider-Man. And he then plays it out. So he does like effectively level up his superhero-ness and he earns it. But then he also then still decides to go back. And it's weird to me. Like, you know, I don't know.
I get it. But then there is this sense of community that he says he leveled up and now he's gonna bring it to his playing field.
Yeah. Does he say that? I can't remember the conversation at the end. And I don't know if you can because it was a while ago now. But his why, you know, Simon Sinek, start with why. When he's having the initial conversation with Tony Stark in his bedroom in Civil War, in Captain America Civil War. And Tony asks him, like, why do you do it? And they have that conversation about looking out for the little guy. I don't know if they brought that back in that decision where he says no to joining the Avengers. And he said something around, like, doing it. Like, I need to go back to my community because I'm all about looking after the little guy. I think that would have made sense to me then.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of bringing that skill set. Yes, I've leveled up. But again, the reason why I'm doing this is not to become an Avenger. It's because I'm looking out for the little guy. So it sort of joins his motivation for doing it in the first place. And so he's leveled up, but he's like, where and why I'm doing this is because I'm looking after my community. So that would have made sense to me. But I don't know if they explicitly said that, or maybe I missed it.
No. He words it much more like, it's a test by Tony Stark if he's, you know, it's the test of character.
Yeah.
Like some Indiana Jones Last Crusade thing.
Only the penitent man shall pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was weird to me. Like, that one scene was, I think, to me, the weak spot of the movie. But the rest of it, I mean, so there's just that weird, weird thing at the end. The rest of it I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, especially, please go on.
No, the other thing I was going to say was, yes, they stole a lot of Miles Morales' storylines and they kind of shoved into this movie, you know, Miles Morales. And I didn't think, I don't know, like the best friend character, what do you call him? Ned?
Yeah, Ned.
I didn't like Ned. Ned was a very bad best friend. I thought it was interesting what they did with Mary Jane or MJ.
Yeah.
From the freshness point of view, I like that they didn't have like the whole Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane, love, romantic angle. I thought it was, you know, they kept the scale simpler, which was good. So, but I think what was good is that they did kind of lay the seeds for it and then also freshen it up a little bit. So I thought that was cool. And I loved the switch and bait, or the bait and switch with, like Michael Keaton being the father.
Yeah, that was great.
Because I was watching it and I was enjoying it. And I'm like, how are all these things going to come together? And then he opens the door and I'm like, oh, snap.
I knew that before I walked into the movie.
Really?
Yeah. I was still not surprised, but I still felt the impact of that scene.
Right. The reveal was done.
Yeah.
Great. Like, and it was kind of like out of nowhere as well. Like, I didn't know. And so even if you knew, like, you didn't know when it was going to show up. And the way they did it, yeah, it was great.
That's old man Keaton for us, no? You don't know?
Old man Keaton. That needs to be a movie in itself, yeah. I think.
I have to put this idea out. Get him for the Dark Knight Returns movie before he's old man Keaton. Just make a continuation of the 1989 Batman movie. And put it in the Dark Knight Returns thing. I think it would be great in seeing him reprise that role as a hardened old Batman.
That would be very interesting. Yeah, that would be very interesting. You know, bring back Tim Burton to direct as well.
Yeah, just think of the scene where he's in the car and the coin drops that he has Spider-Man on his backseat. Just with the light from the traffic light in his face.
Yeah.
And then, you know, extrapolate that image to Batman.
Yeah,
you
know, inside the Batmobile.
Bruce Wayne, yeah.
Michael Keaton, I mean, he's just getting better and better. Like, he's always been like you said, you know, started off with comedy, but just over the last couple of years, it's just fantastic. So that's why I'm excited for American Assassin. Like, I want to see what he does with that. Because it's like, again, it's like one of these movies that you're expecting to be like, just, it's like a Jason Bourne-esque, another one of these kind of things. But I really like Michael Keaton and I really like Dylan O'Brien as well. And the two of them playing, so they're both got those comedy backgrounds, right? But they're both playing these super intense roles. Yeah, it's It's gonna be. I'm gonna get popcorn and just
enjoy.
I gotta watch this play out. You know,
2 or 3 days ago, I saw the movie where Michael Keaton plays the contractor that clones himself 4 times with Andy McDowell. Yeah, I mean, the fuck.
I know. What? Yeah. No, he's great.
Yeah.
All right. So, final thoughts on Spider-Man.
I wrote down. I dig that he's not as agile, or is not portrayed as agile as in the other movies. The movements feel natural.
Yeah, the movements feel, and I think especially like this early stage of his Spider-Man career.
He doesn't contort himself in poses that feel painful or natural. He just feels like a person.
Yeah, because I think, you know, the Andrew Garfield ones emulated the video games a lot, I believe.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man looked very rubbery, like all those CGI shots of him floating, like swinging through the city. He kind of looked like a rubber man that was just sort of being flopped around.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the combination of Tom Holland's dance and gymnastics background really helped ground the way the movements work in reality. Like the physics of it just felt so much more natural.
Yeah.
Like you said, he looked like a person rather than a rubber mannequin, you know.
And the insta-kill bugged me. There was a big gripe I had that it didn't feel right for Tony Stark to give a 14 or 15-year-old boy the feature was locked behind a firewall, which he apparently cracked. But I thought it was a bit much.
Which goes back to the Venom Blast from Miles Morales, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they're effectively like, in order to differentiate this Spider-Man, they stole, I feel, a whole bunch of stuff from Miles Morales' both story and power set. I mean, if the suit allows him to go invisible, then you know that it's they've just stolen Miles Morales' power set.
And then they mention Miles Morales because Donald Glover's character, the Prowler, says his nephew lives
in that neighborhood.
In that neighborhood. I thought,
everyone's like, Miles,
show, not tell.
One of the things, show me Miles. One of the things I would like to see, though, and I think very similar to the Ultimate Spider-Man run in the comics, is I would like to see the story progress and actually do that transition from Peter Parker to Miles Morales. If the movies end up doing that, it would be super cool, which would include what happens to Peter Parker in that story, you know, because I think when we get to the stage where we've seen like 2 or 3 goblin fights already, but if we can do the Ultimate Spider-Man version of what happens with the goblin and then Miles Morales filling, I don't know, should we do spoilers? Does everyone know what happens in Ultimate Spider-Man? All right, this will be spoilers.
10 years.
Yeah, okay, fine. So Peter Parker dies, right?
Yep.
I want to see that fight. I want to see Peter Parker die, and I want to see the mantle passed on. And I can you imagine, like, after, so you have three, maybe you do it as a trilogy, Peter Parker effect dies at the end of the third movie and it's actually Peter Parker's death, but you've foreshadowed Miles Morales in the last two movies, so you've seen him as a little boy, so you've heard about him in the first one because the Prowler says I have a nephew. In the second one you see this like little kid, and in the third one maybe he gets involved and that's at the point where he gets bitten or whatever, but at the end of the third movie Peter Parker literally dies, and that's how it ends. And then the next set of movies is the origin story of Miles Morales now taking over that mantle. And I think that would just be so cool. That you could do
great.
Then you do a Miles trilogy, right? And then you know what happens at the end of the Miles trilogy? It's Peter Parker comes back, and you're like, what the fuck? You know, that would be cool. Sorry, language warning.
Clone saga all over again.
Yeah, but it's like fresher than the Clone saga, you know? Because that threw me when I was reading Ultimate Spider-Man, like when Peter returns, and then the way Peter returns and what happens after he returns was just done really well as well. So I think that would be, I've just plotted out Sony's next 9 years.
I guess the franchise will be back with Marvel by then.
It's never going back. Sony owns Spider-Man. Sony owns 10% of Spider-Man, so they're never going to give it up.
Yeah.
Just like Rick Ashley. They're never going to give him up. Sorry, did I just Rickroll myself? Did I Rickroll you or did I Rickroll myself?
That was amazing. Because there's a a doom metal version of the song online, which I'm hooked on.
Can you put the doom metal version in the post?
It's done.
I gotta listen to that. I love doing, like, when we do karaoke, that song. I'm Rickroll people. It's great.
You have to do the dance moves because I've seen a video of it where he performs live, and the guy's in constant motion because there's no band behind him, and I just imagine him in this white suit and with all the lights, and a guy must have been fit as hell because anybody else would have collapsed on that stage after those 2 minutes.
Yeah, but it's not like a super massive energetic dance, right? It's more kind of like he needs to go to the toilet really bad, and so he's just moving to, like, keep himself.
Yeah, but he's wiggling with his arms.
I haven't seen it. So I'm just remembering the white suit from, like, the 80s. Like, that's the last time I would have seen it. All right, cool. So that wraps up Spider-Man. So time is getting a little bit short. So should we move on to the next? Next topic, which I guess is trailers and upcoming movies. So what's got us excited? So we just had San Diego Comic-Con, right? So there's a whole bunch of stuff that was released and shown, but I guess we'll talk about the highlights. So what was the biggest thing for you?
If we're talking about the highlights, we should cut out the first thing. Because,
okay,
I don't know.
Okay, let's go to the low light.
Okay, Inhumans looks like they filmed and I don't want to offend people, but it looks like elaborate cosplay.
Yeah, no, and so this is my fear with Teen Titans as well.
Yeah,
like it just looks so bad.
I don't know.
It does look like elaborate cosplay. It looks it's got a beam TV channel look about it. And
have you heard about the press conference?
No.
Jeff Loeb basically at some point shut up the people in attendance and just asked the questions he wanted to hear himself.
Really?
No, nobody seen it. There's even a tweet by some TV critic who was attending who said it's like they're really trying to push away the thing that this is gonna be a show that's dead after a season.
Yeah. It already looks like a show that's dead on arrival. Yeah. I mean, some of the talent's good. I mean, I really like Lucy Lawless is in there.
Really?
I think. Is it?
I don't
is
know.
That Lucy Lawless? Who's playing Medusa?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Hold on. Is it? I haven't really looked this up. Let me look it up really quickly.
But then, you know, I've heard that the guy who plays Black Bolt has like a 50-page document on sign language, which he learned.
Really?
So it's really sad to see that some people really tried to put, an effort into this.
Yeah, okay, it's not Lucy Lawless. It's just, I don't know why I thought it was Lucy Lawless.
It's Lawless Lucy. And, sorry.
Ewan Rheon, so he was the bastard of Bolton, Ramsay Snow, in Game of Thrones, and from Misfits, which I thought he was awesome in both of those roles. So he's playing the crazy villain guy.
Maximus
in this one.
Mad.
Maximus the Mad. That's the one. I knew he was mad. But it just looks terrible. It looks so bad. It's like, it almost looks like you said, like cosplay or crossed with pantomime. Like, I don't know what's going on with this show. But I don't even know. And then they're going to put it in IMAX and I don't know. It looks like we want to fail, but spectacularly, you know, I don't know. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on, because I don't want to waste any more time on it. But yeah, not you know, that's my fear. I hope Teen Titans doesn't go the same path. I hope it doesn't look like bad cosplay. Anyway. For me, when it comes to highlights though, when I thought like what was like the best things that came out of it, I was really there was like a 4-minute Justice League reveal, which impressed me. It's interesting. The thing that impresses me about Justice League is just the story now of Justice League and its creation. Like, after Zack Snyder departing, Joss Whedon coming in and then just changing everything. Well, we don't know how much he's going to change, but it's changing a lot. Like, the reshoots seem to be extensive. They seem to be. It's not just to fill some gaps. And the music's changed from Junkie XL. So the soundtrack and the score from Junkie XL to Danny Elfman is doing it now. So, you know, going from Junkie XL, which does that really intense metal industrial style dark music to Danny Elfman, who's like much more, it's got a lot more levity with his approach. And so like the whole tone of the movie is shifting. Characters are kind of being redone. Like apparently like there was a interview with the guy who plays the father of Cyborg in the movie. And he mentioned that the Cyborg character is being lightened up a lot compared to what the original Cyborg was going to be like. And so it was interesting to watch this thing come together. Like I was like, and then there was a 4-minute reveal of stuff that we've seen. So Wonder Woman getting a lot more show. Like it's almost like the movie's being made in real time in response to what's happening in the industry and fan reaction to like the Wonder Woman movie. And yeah, I don't know. Like it's really interesting to me. And so I hope the movie doesn't end up being like what Suicide Squad was, which was like a movie, just a hack job of like different styles and tones and everything. But yeah, I mean, what's your take?
The footage that they released definitely shows that they progressed in a positive way, but it still feels artificial. I think that the CGI for Cyborg is still not working for me. And there's this scene where Aquaman falls through tumbles through a building on the power demon, and you clearly see where the CGI ends and Jason Momoa jumped off a table or something like that.
He jumped off the green screen block.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope the movie gets good. I really hope so.
At this stage, I'm willing to give them... Well, they're still in post-production. And yeah. they're still in production, right?
Yeah.
So the special effects and I think a lot of that stuff hopefully will get better as they progress towards the actual release. But you can see the tone shifting.
Yeah.
You can see the tone shifting. So the Hans Zimmer concert that I went to, that was like 2 weeks ago as well, right? So I don't know if we spoke.
Two or three
weeks.
You showed me some photos or a video?
Yeah, we texted. Yeah, because we did discuss it a little bit. So he played the Superman theme, the Man of Steel Superman theme. So he was really awesome because he was like, with his great accent, "Shall we dip our toe into superhero territory?" And the audience just went wild, right? So then he started playing Man of Steel. Or the orchestra started playing Man of Steel. But then, like, as Man of Steel was playing, like, all the female orchestra members, like, kind of stepped forward. And then it transitioned into the Wonder Woman theme.
Okay.
And the Man of Steel theme is super slow and boring. It's just, like, the piano, like, you know, the really brooding emo Man of Steel that we had in that movie. Whereas the Wonder Woman theme was just full of energy and it was so intense and it was so cool. And it's almost like that's the transition, hopefully, that the series is going through. Like, it started off with, like, Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, which was, like, this super slow, badly paced, intense, emo stuff. And then Wonder Woman showed up, and it's just, like, awesome, you know? I'm hoping that as we progress into Justice League, it continues that momentum. And the transition from, like, what it was in the early movies to what it is now has a lot more energy. You know, it's doesn't take itself so super seriously as it does before. Because I think DC needs to, you know, it wants to be darker. It wants to differentiate itself from Marvel, which I like. I like the more intense and dark take on the superhero movies because Marvel's not doing that. But they need to find the right balance of those two things. Because up to, you know, to a point, these are guys in capes running around, you know? So it's not going to be as gritty and intense as they're probably trying to make it be now.
But then there is this scene in the teaser where, is it Wally West or Barry Allen?
It's Barry Allen.
It's Barry Allen in the movie
Flash
as well?
Yeah.
Okay, where he talks with Bruce and he mentions that he's way in over his head here because he used to push people and then run away. And I think that's the right balance of darkness that DDC movies need to just acknowledge how these people would behave in a realistic environment. I mean, even if he's working with the police, I don't know if he's a CSI guy in the in the movies as well. But you know, that's at least for me, that's the perfect pitch to where reality and this fictional world should meet.
Yeah. And sort of like showing the absurdity of it. You know, like you said, it's a great balance.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they play that through. Like, I think the Flash in this movie, especially with Ezra Miller playing him, is going to be kind of the the joker of the team.
Yeah.
You know? So I think, you know, hopefully we can continue to get a lot of those moments with the Flash. What we're also seeing, though, is like Aquaman also has his own sense of like humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
Like it's a more kind of like, it feels a little bit more of like kind of like he's more of a dude. Like yeah. Even with the surfing,
yeah.
Surfing the parademon through the building and then like jumping off and just kind of like flicking his hair out like he just came out of a wave, you know? Like I thought, I enjoy that moment.
No, it looks great, but I think it's kind of, it's a misappropriation for Aquaman. But then Wonder Woman is very regal in her, very regal, very straight. I don't want to say cold, but there's a certain air of distance.
I mean, look,
she's
a Wonder god, Woman, right? Yeah. She's the daughter of Zeus.
Yeah.
I think that's going to work. Well,
no,
I think it'll
definitely work.
Because I think that's a part of the team dynamic, is they're all so different. Yeah. If they were all the same, it's kind of like, it'll be boring. They need to be different. And I think that's what sets the Justice League apart from, I mean, not so much the Avengers, because they're like, that roster is completely different. But they all stand for something different, but they unite together. And I think, you know, so my analogy, which is going to be really bad, because, you know, which one begats the other. But that's what made the Spice Girls so interesting. Is that they were all individuals, right? And it was all about understanding those differences and coming together. I can't believe I just said that. But,
it's amazing. You're upping your game with every word you say. It's amazing.
This is what happens when I don't eat. I haven't had breakfast yet. Anyway. I'm having a sugar crash right now.
Because I thought of the Avengers as a team of contractors that come to fix your house.
Yeah.
While the Justice League is like, you know, a more political group, like a team of troubleshooters that fixes governments.
Yeah, and I mean, and not just that. I mean, to me, the Justice League has a much stronger sense of purpose.
Yeah.
You know, I think because the Justice League all come together as volunteers. And especially, like, maybe as the Justice League expands, you know, you can say that kind of is different. But Simon Sinek, start with why. Their reason for being there, you know, is very much deeply ingrained with all of them. And they come together to face those massive challenges. Whereas I think the Avengers, like you said, they do have a sense of contract. Like, their relationships define more who the Avengers are, more than... Because, like, the Marvel Universe has a lot more ideological and relationship nuances compared to, in my opinion, the DC Universe, you know?
Yeah.
The DC side of things is a lot more black and white in terms of good and evil. You know, that's just the way I see it.
Yeah. So. But it really feels that way. It feels like the Justice League, it feels like the Avengers get casted, like the Spice Girls. while the Justice League are like, and I don't know any big pop band that, you know, met during high school and are very different characters, but learn to work together through music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Josie and the Pussycats?
Yeah, Josie and the Pussycats. Yeah.
Anyway, cool. So anyway, so the... I'm very much interested in Justice League, but more for the story of the Justice League. But the thing, the movie that I'm looking forward to is Thor Ragnarok. I think that is continuing to look super fantastic.
Yes. That will probably be the movie of the year in terms of genre movies. Because even the trailer, and I put it in the show notes, but there has been an exhibition where they show some of the costumes and the wallpaper from the Grandmaster's office or lounge.
Yeah, yeah, looks
amazing. The whole thing looks
just
amazing.
The viewing platform, like where they were all sitting to watch the fight, right? Yeah.
Looks amazing. Even the guards, the costumes, the guards were, they look like they just stepped off the page. You know?
Yeah, the design and the attention to detail, like in the way they put that movie together, looks fantastic. Yeah. And, I think there was even a difference in between the two trailers that we saw. So the initial trailer that came out ages ago where Thor sees Hulk for the first time and he's like, yes! And when they redo that scene now and Thor's kind of telling him what kind of a day he's had, you know, like, that's fantastic. But like Hulk looks so much better, I thought, like even between those two trailers, the CGI improved so much.
And I wonder if we get some kind of the Grey Hulk situation where Banner remains more in control, or the Hulk gets more aware?
Yeah, well, we're starting to see that, right? Because at the end of the trailer, the Hulk actually talks. So they're having that conversation about fire. And, you know, the Hulk, I'm not going to redo the conversation, but that was fantastic. Yeah. Like, so you can see Hulk is starting to become like more, like you said, aware, more communicative rather than just grunting and snarling at people.
I mean, that's my favorite kind of Hulk.
Yeah.
Not that when Banner's in control, but where he gets a sense of agency beyond the I'm angry Hulk smash.
And I think with where this movie is going, if you're going to make a buddy movie with the Hulk and Thor, you need them to both be at least on like equal terms intellectually. You know, they need to be able to communicate in order to be buddies. Like, otherwise Hulk is just, like you said, he's just a rage monster, literally. So yeah, it's going to work. So it looks so cool. Kate Blanchett as Hela just looks awesome. I can't wait to see her.
Yeah.
Like, some of those scenes, like, you know, you talked about like metal a lot in the podcast today, but some of those scenes where Hela's facing off the Valkyrie, they look like those like 1970s metal record covers.
Yeah, they look like a King Crimson album cover, or something.
Yeah. I'm like, this is those mashup of like so many different things all coming together, but all working so perfectly in harmony. Yeah, it looks fantastic. Like, I really can't wait for this movie.
The thing with Hela is they even got the costume to the full
head. Oh, that headpiece looks awesome. And she looks like she's having so much of fun in that role too. Like, Kate Blanchett, she looks like she's fully enjoying it.
And that's the thing, because I don't know with whom I talked about it. And I said, and Kate Blanchett is playing the villain in this movie. That Kate Blanchett is playing the villain in a superhero movie. What is happening?
Galadriel? Again, you know, going back to my Lord of the Rings obsession lately, this is what happens when Galadriel takes the One Ring of Power. You know, she ends up becoming the god of death. Speaking of which, though, that was also awesome. At the end is when she's kind of got like Thor by the throat and she's like, what were you the god of again? And then you get the thunder and lightning and he goes into avatar state.
Effectively. Yeah, crashes down.
I'm like, oh, that's going to be supreme. That's going to be really cool.
Yeah. And I wonder how because the film is supposed to have like an 85 minute or 80 minute runtime.
All right.
So I imagine it being like, you know, the pacing must be all over the place.
Yeah. That's going to be, I mean, it'll be cool. I hope, you know, that sense of that momentum just pulls the movie through. Like, it's going to be I hope it's one of those experiences where you're like, you just don't want it to end. But, you know, because things are just going, there's so much happening and you're like, just enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun kind of thing.
And where you leave the experience exhausted, even though you sat in a chair.
Yeah. So I can't wait for it. What's cool as well is that this is going to be the final Thor movie, right? Like, there's no more Thor solo movies after this?
Oh, I think, yes.
So this is the last one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with the Thor. I mean, I think he's clearly going to be in Avengers, obviously. But I think from a solo point of view, this is it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next.
Yeah.
I was watching a YouTube video, which I wanted to bring up, and I'll try to find the link so I can send you that in the show notes. But it was talking about the Avatar, The Last Airbender, and the escalation of power, which is what made Avatar so good, is, you know, Aang has a very clear goal in terms of trying to learn the four elements. And when he is finally able to achieve that and control being in the Avatar state, the show ends. Like, when, you know, he reaches a level of power which effectively makes him a god, and then the show ends. Whereas on the flip side, I think Korra, she got into the Avatar state and she could control it quite early, and so the show kind of didn't have anywhere to go with that because she was already like this godlike figure. And so I've been thinking about that a lot in terms of like these movies and stuff. And so it's quite interesting that Thor has always been like seen as the god of lightning and been referred to as the god of lightning. But with this final movie for his story, he effectively becomes the god. You know, he like, it's like Wonder Woman, because this is the weird thing with Wonder Woman, right, as well, is she achieves her god state at the end of the Wonder Woman movie, but in like now it, you know, in Justice League, is she still going to have that power set? Like, is that going to be something that she can tap into and call at will or not? Like, you know, it's going to be weird if she takes a step back as well, goes back to just running around rather than having the power of flight.
Yeah. Especially with the odds that they would be facing in the Justice League movie, which is Steppenwolf. So the new gods show up. Yeah. I mean, the devil is sending basically a demon or his chief warmonger.
Chief among minions. Yeah. So, I'll send you the link to the YouTube video. It was quite interesting just thinking about that. And again, in terms of story and character, right? Is that once you've achieved that level, where do you go from there? Like because on the flip side, it means that the bad guys also need to escalate. And so, you know, you can't have one side become all powerful and then the other side not be able to have that symmetry because there's no more contest.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting then to see how Thor ends and where he, you know, where he goes after this. And it being the final of his trilogy of movies, it's a good place to end his character arc. So when we see him again, hopefully he retains that power set. But it's Thanos with the Infinity Stones. And so the stakes are raised once again. And so even though he's now at God level, it's still a contest.
Yeah.
Hmm. Anyway, yeah,
that'll be interesting, especially in, you know, at some point they have to recast. They have to stay fresh in some way because the actors are not getting any younger.
Yeah.
And so on and so on.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, as Elton John put it, from the day we arrive on the planet.
Exactly. You know,
and so on and so on.
And so
can you feel the love tonight?
Well, I'm feeling love for Star Wars, so there's a lot going on in that world. So we had Chris Lord and Phil Miller have left Han Solo.
Yeah, movie that nobody needs gets new director.
Taking the risk there. So Ron Howard has taken over.
Yeah.
So I mean, what's your feeling around that?
He's an accomplished director, and I think he will produce something that's fun.
Yeah.
But it shows a weakness because they must have been aware of what Chris Lord and Phil Miller have done and how they work.
Right.
It feels like a pissing contest between the powers that be. And the directors, and directors lost the contest basically, and now
yeah, I know for sure.
Yeah,
it's effectively a battle between the Empire and the Rebellion, right? I think, you know, it kind of shows that, like, is it Kathleen Kennedy?
Yeah,
she's in charge of the Lucasfilm effectively. And it's almost like, you know, Disney being the corporate empire that it is has a very clear vision for where they want these things to go. And so they bring in these directors, but the directors need to be controlled as well in terms of making sure that they get to the vision and they achieve it in the way that Disney intends. And I think one of the things, you know, it's a shot, it's not so much a shot across the bow because it's an actual direct hit, is that by doing this, Kathleen Kennedy just, you know, has proven, look, I'm not going to take lip from anyone. This is the way I want it done. And be this a warning to every other director that comes down the line. If you're not towing the line, this is what's going to happen. And I think, you know, Marvel with Edgar Wright went down a similar path as well.
Yeah, but I think Edgar Wright left on his own devices. Was he fired?
That was really the first time it happened. But the message was very much muddled when that happened. Edgar Wright left because Marvel wanted him to do things that he didn't want to do. So he decided to walk away rather than towing the line. So it didn't get to the point where Marvel had to fire him. He did walk away, so he didn't leave of his own accord. But at the same time, he left because he wasn't being allowed to do what he wanted to do.
I mean, props to those people to retain, or to Edgar Wright in this case, that he stood up and, you know, he walked the walk to its ultimate conclusion. But
it's an interesting one. We want fresh content. We want there to be good quality movies coming out, but we're also so invested in the universes that are being created that you can't afford to have your directors taking it in different directions. Like, you can't afford for the MCU to snowflake out into so many different visions, because we know that Feige's vision is what's making everyone excited, and all these movies, the fact that they're all bending towards this one goal is what's part of what makes it exciting, right? If Ant-Man went completely different and had nothing to do with the rest of it, it'll feel like, well, you know, what? How does that fit? It's going to open a whole bunch of other questions, you know?
And it'll be interesting to see how it will affect James Gunn, because now he's like the golden boy, because he doesn't have to play nice with anything else in the Marvel universe. But how will his trajectory look after Infinity War and the Guardians are introduced into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, I think after the Avengers, the next set of movies, I don't know what the next, because it's like, I don't know what the set of things is going to look like. Yeah. And it's almost like you're going to get a whole new creative team that comes in to plot out the next 20 years, you know, because everything, you know, who the Avengers are, the team lineup, the roster, it's going to change. All these actors' contracts are coming up, like Robert Downey Jr. I think Thor potentially only has like Ragnarok and then two more movies on his contract, then he's up for renegotiation. And that's where they could effectively start looking at, you know, progressing the characters, like you said, either killing some off, replacing others, benching some, bringing in new characters. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
It's so absurd.
We kind of left from Star Wars to go back to like Marvel.
No, it's the same franchise. I mean, it's the same company, because you clearly see with the guy who directed Jurassic World is doing Episode 9.
Yeah.
And I can't, I mean, now I understand this decision even better, because it's like with Gareth Edwards on Rogue One, he won't give Marvel any lip.
Right.
Because he clearly knows his limitations at this stage of his career.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. So it'll be, I mean, that's the interesting part, to see like how these people react and how Marvel and Disney and Lucasfilm proceed.
Yeah. And I just realized, because I'm interested in what Rian Johnson is going to say about working on Episode 8 in a couple of years, because this summer, Phil Rinsler, the guy who did all the making of Star Wars books, started a blog about his time at Lucasfilm. He stopped working at Lucasfilms after they sold to Marvel.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because that blog has been taken down.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and it's not that he didn't outright trash Lucasfilm or any of the employees, but it gave an outsider a rather neutral perspective of the machinations and what hangs on the workings,
right,
of a movie like Star Wars. And it was interesting to get a bit of the magic taken away from one, or the tinted glasses
got glasses.
Yeah, got taken away and got replaced by a sense of reality. It would be interesting, because I think Rian Johnson is somebody is a very opinionated person.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I'm happy for him to see him work on a Star Wars movie and get his name out there, I'm also asking myself how much he had to compromise his vision for the movie.
Yeah.
To come out at the end.
Yeah. I don't know. The previews of Episode 8 look interesting. There's a lot of interesting choices being made. But yeah, I think, like you said, in about 2 years' time, we're going to start getting like the real story behind what actually happened. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Cool. All right. So should we just record the ending?
Then yeah,
I can run off.
Okay. Let's do the ending. Now we have to enter in a, make it sound natural. See if we hadn't had.
No, I mean, look, I mean, we were talking about Star Wars before. So I think time record in terms of the ending, but I mean, my thought on what's coming up with Star Wars, you know, with Rian Johnson. It's a South African name.
Yeah.
I should know how to say it, but I don't know. But yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting, you know, because there's the Star Wars story itself, right? There's the plot of the character arcs of like Rey and Finn and all the characters on one level, and then there's also all of the drama and politics of what's happening from a production point of view. And we, you know, it's like we're following both of those stories.
Yeah.
And I think we spent all this time talking about the politics level and not the character story level. Like, it's quite interesting. To me, that's as interesting.
Yeah.
And I think it's changing the way films are made, clearly. Like, you know, the model of how films are made now, because the studios are having an increasing level of input and, you know, and a much larger set of requirements for what they need these franchises to be. So it's quite interesting. And I think that's where you kind of, it's almost like the merger of TV and film, because you have this showrunner that's running things, and then every director has to do what the episode's going to require it to do.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's a convergence. And so I think that model converging, and also the convergence of the technology from a streaming point of view, is that you can almost see these studios are now effectively creating super TV shows, because they're like running. It's like you could almost say that what Marvel is about to finish with Avengers 4 is the end of its season one.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, everything has led up to this point, and then season two is going to look completely different. And then the same with Star Wars. Like, it'll get to episode 9, and then that'll be like, okay, so what's the next trilogy, or what's the next set of stories we're going to tell?
You know? How will they approach it? Because the thing is, we're talking more about the machinations behind the movies, because we don't know anything about the movies. We just get these glimpses.
And, yeah, exactly. Marvel's, Lucasfilm, super secretive about, which sometimes can be detrimental.
Yeah.
Because the surprises are too surprising and people are not prepared for them. Like Rey being the main character and being the Jedi in Force Awakens. A lot of people were like, what? Anyway, cool. So yeah, that's, a lot of stuff to watch. And I'm sure we're going to have a lot more discussions going forward.
Yes. A lot more discussions.
Fear in his voice. Yeah. And with that, we've kind of come to the end of this episode. So thank you for following along.
Thank you so much.
And yes, hopefully I'm not going to get sick next couple of weeks. And then we can continue Asteroids being in exile.
In exile, yeah. Continue being awesome. Soon with a screaming baby in the background.
It was very painful. It's not like one of those things where you can, it's not like one of those things where you can like do stuff. Like, I couldn't even watch TV because I had this like massive pounding headache for like pretty much the whole time for a week. And I had muscle aches. So I couldn't everything like hurt to just like all your muscles and your body. So I would just lie there in silence in the dark, you know?
Yeah, because
like, seriously, like
the light sensitivity. Like,
I tried to watch Netflix and stuff and I just couldn't because it messes with your nervous system.
Yeah.
Right? So they tell you that, but like, what does that mean? You know, it's like the difference between when you say I'm driving rotary, driving a rotary engine car. It's like it's got linear acceleration, but what does that actually mean? You know, you get these shivers and waves that go up and down your body, right? But worse than that, you get the sensation of like being touched and like stuff like creeping down your body and like down your face and your hands and your back. But it feels like claws.
Are you sure you didn't just go to a preview of It?
So this is the thing, because leading up to this, before I got sick, I was watching Castlevania on Netflix. So all the fever dreams that I'm having are like vampire demons, you know, like attacking me. And I'm like, I just should stop watching TV. Like,
we should inform Warren Ellis about that.
I know, right? That's the only reason I kept on going is because Warren Ellis was involved. Anyway, I stopped watching Castlevania and haven't gone back to it.
I just watched Castlevania last week.
Oh, right. Did you finish it?
Yeah. I thought it would take up like a week.
Yeah.
Then it only took up 2 hours.
Oh, you watched it in a binge?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Was it good? Like, does it end well?
Yeah. One Alice kept me going.
Right.
But it's really weird. When you watch the ultrasound of the kid at 12 weeks, it looks like one of Terry Gilliam's cutout animations.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. Really weird. Just this. weird hand movement.
Super fast as well.
Yeah, it's bomb. It's amazing. It's like this. It's like a black hole that keeps expanding with 160 beats per
minute. Oh, wow.
It's amazing, because I thought it was because of the distress caused by the ultrasonic probe, but it's regular. It's about 100. It's between 144 and 160 beats per minute.
Wow. Yeah, it's like a muscle. It is, the heart's a muscle, right? So that's just it working out. It's just going. It's just getting. I need to get huge.
I need to work for 70 years.
Yeah, it's got that Schwarzenegger. I'm just, you know, because every muscle builder has a Schwarzenegger accent, right? Must get big, you know? So yes, you can bring that into the ultrasound chamber next time you guys have.
Yeah. Must get huge. Ice to see you.
Ice to see you.